ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Why did Matthew Flinders write such saucy letters to his best friend, George Bass?
Who really chopped off Chopper's ears?
And why did they name a swimming pool after an Australian Prime Minister who drowned?
These are the kind of historical questions we'll be asking on The Dead Can't Sue.
So join me, Alicia Simmons.
And me, Lee Boucher.
Find it by searching for The Dead Can't Sue on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
A while back, the electricity regulator announced cheaper prices, cheaper default market offers in most of Australia. It ought to have meant cheaper electricity prices, lower bills, unless you received a note from your provider at the same time saying it was cutting the discount on the default market offer. Of course, you could shop around, but the energy companies and insurance companies and petrol stations seem to know how to make that hard. Hard enough to exhaust us. We're about to get something of a masterclass in how to fight back. It begins by understanding the tricks they use and the lengths they'll go to get more out of us than we want to give. Welcome to The Economy Stupid with me, Peter Martin, and a masterclass from a former Young Economist of the Year, Professor David Byrne from the University of Melbourne, who laid it out for us a year or so back. After the representation, we'll have an update on what he's been discovering since. And Megan Flamer, an associate at the Monash Business School and senior industry fellow at RMIT University. Buckle in.
Hello.
Hi, Peter.
David, a few years ago in Perth in 2010, you noticed a substantial jump in the profit margins of petrol stations, a doubling, in fact. At whatever time of year, whether the price was low or high, it was almost always a good deal higher than it would have been before the jump. How did you and your colleagues investigate what happened?
Yeah, so my colleague, Nick DeRuze, came one day with a graph and said, profits just started going up in 2010, so it was sort of like looking at Perth from 40,000 feet up and saying, wow, that's a lot. And so we started digging into this massive jump in sort of profitability all the time for all the stations. And the thing Perth had that allowed us to do this was this incredible data. We could see every price, every station set at all points in time, and effectively it's almost like looking at a petri dish and having the ability to go from, you know, the dish itself down to the microbes, the atoms, if you will, of where these price increases came from. That's where it came from. And so we just keep zooming in, and we sort of uncovered all kinds of interesting behavior that was kind of sitting underneath this 40,000 foot picture.
You looked at 1.6 million price observations. What did you see? And I think it was an evolving pattern.
It was an evolving pattern, but really we're looking at, just to give you an idea, 15 years of data, 1.6 million observations. And it turns out there's a particular date in all of that where effectively, you know, we start to see a world where prices start going up every Thursday. Like the sun rises every Thursday, the prices
this
go up.
This didn't happen before.
Didn't happen before. In 2009, prices were going up all the time, every day of the week. And then, you know, in and around 2009, 2010, Thursday became this magical day. And it was magical for years, 5, 6 years. And you start looking into it, and we look very closely. The company started to magically be able to coordinate on price increases, 10, 20%. Every Thursday.
And you were able to zoom in. So what did you see happened at the micro level?
We see one thing that pops out is on Wednesdays, there's a bit of juice going on as well. BP starts raising all of its station's prices on Wednesdays.
The day before.
And the following day, everybody follows. And whatever BP did on Wednesday, all the other players, your Caltex, your Woolworths, your Coles, would all hit that target that BP had set on the Wednesdays.
That would have been expensive for BP. It would have lost business on the Wednesday.
Initially. So BP's doing this with its entire station network, right? So, you know, I'm BP, I go up, Peter, you follow me. And so we have this leader-follower thing going on. Now, if my price is bigger than Peter's price and we have petrol stations near each other, it turns out in a world where we can look at a couple stations and there's a big price gap, anybody think about driving around. If you see one station's 10 cents per liter higher than the other station, we just drop like immediately the expensive station. So it's super expensive to BP on every Wednesday. I'm 10 cents per liter higher than, say, Peter, and I'm making no money. And so BP was doing this with its entire station network in Perth at first. But then when we see over an 18-month period, gradually, they would, you know, raise price on Wednesday with all its stations, everybody would follow. It would raise prices with half of its stations, everybody would follow. Huh. It would raise prices with 20% of its stations, everybody follow. It would raise its price with one station.
They got down to one station, which you could call the signal, the sentinel.
That's right. They had this sort of, I've always called it like a flare gun. You know, you're lost in the woods in Tasmania and you need to get out of there. You shoot a flare up and they can find you. It was like on Wednesdays, they were shooting a flare gun with just a station. And all the other players, including BP on the Thursday, knew the exact target to hit. And so then how do you make more money with a flare gun? Well, you just shoot it higher and higher and higher, and we can all price higher and higher and higher. And so that's really a pricing system that we saw BP was able to create. And everybody in the market basically reached mutual understanding on how to do this. And nobody spoke a word to each other.
Megan, what would you call that? If nobody spoke a word to each other, can it be collusion if no one colludes?
I think this story is like really hits me in the feels because I'm a Perth girl and I wasn't living there at that time, but my mum would constantly say, no, you can't fill up the car on this day. You have to fill up on the Thursday. And they live quite close to, you know, there's this crossroads of like Walcott Street and Fitzgerald Street in North Perth, where there'd be a line around the block ruining the traffic on that intersection
right, as
soon as they would drop the price. And that was a Shell station, not a BP. And I thought she was crazy. I was like, this doesn't happen. And so, Mum, I'm sorry, you are vindicated by this data now. David Byrne says so. But, I mean, surely this is collusion. They're manipulating the market.
What's the legal position with the Australian competition law, David? Because they're not, you know, Adam Smith said that whenever business people meet, there's some conspiracy against the public. They're not meeting. Can it be collusion?
Let's start with something we can all agree on, that if Peter and I, if we phoned each other every day and said, all right, what's our price today? And we just agreed to it and did that, that's probably illegal. And that is illegal. We can't explicitly communicate with each other using verbal or written communication, words, right?
Okay.
So it's sort of uncontroversial in competition law and policy that the use of words to fix prices or fix whatever you do as competitors, that's illegal. It's conspiracy. The gray area that shows up is whether or not we might think with the way we set prices in a market, are prices like words as a medium of communication.
I mean, they're blaring out the front of the station like a bat signal for exactly what they're doing.
And it's even more than that. It's not just out the front of the station. The companies throughout this entire period can watch each other on the internet in real time, every single station. So even if your station's on the other side of the city, it's as if I can see it.
Well, you can see it on Google now. Yeah, I mean, like literally, you can look up petrol prices on there.
So the part of the law in Section 45 of our Competition Act is where it shows up. It's something called a concerted practice. And this was sort of these reforms came in around 2015 that basically say you can't communicate in private, i.e., you know, talking, but you also cannot communicate in public.
So it's arguably illegal. Because they're communicating in public, perhaps.
You could imagine a world where you might test it as being a concerted practice, that we are making a concerted effort to do something that's as if we talked.
David, it's not just petrol stations, right? Researchers have found this in other fields.
Yeah, so there are two major cases in the United States before the Department of Justice that's alleging this is happening with rental prices across the United States for apartments. So it's creating 5% increases in rental prices.
Coordinated
actions. And these are like, right, let's think about what we're talking about. Fuel, homes, and the other one's food. So in the wholesale food supply chain for meat, poultry, pork, these sorts of things. Again, major food suppliers are all sharing this information on their prices and their quantities. And it's been alleged that that's creating this anti-competitive coordinated action to raise food prices. And the last place I'll tell you where it's recently been uncovered, and this was on the basis of the Perth paper. So this, what's happened in Perth is kind of affecting the world as a case study. Yeah.
Go Perth.
Hundreds of thousands of products on Amazon are now exhibiting this type of behavior with companies selling, you know, spatulas coordinating on higher prices.
Well, the prices all jump at once and then slowly edge down when they compete away.
And then they reset and they jump again just like it's Thursday in Perth.
Megan, do you believe this? In other words, do you as a consumer believe what we are hearing, that this seems to be in many, many, many places?
Yeah, I absolutely believe it. I mean, you see it with your own eyes, you experience it. You know, we see how dynamic pricing is operating on most websites. I mean, even if you're looking at, you know, the situations with Ticketek and right. Taylor Swift.
But I mean, let me just push back on all of this, whether it's nefarious. We live in these capitalistic markets. What are the companies trying to do? Make as much money as they can, subject to the laws that regulate them and the technologies that they have to do it. So if Taylor Swift decides to charge prices really high and gradually bring them down over time to maximize as much revenue as she can because she has new access to data and algorithms, that's what you signed up for with capitalism.
But also, I just want to not put Taylor in it here. That was Ticketek. It wasn't necessarily Taylor.
Sure, but
well, some of those artists actually get more than 100% of the ticket price because the merchandise and so on that can be sold associated with it. So I don't know if Taylor's off the hook. We are feeling taken advantage of here on The Economy is Stupid with me, Peter Martin, my guest this week, David Byrne and Megan Flamer. Megan, I want to ask about our side of it now, how we shop around. How do you feel when you shop around for electricity? Do you feel you're getting the best possible deal when you ring up?
I feel like I am unusual in that I've moved around a lot. I've lived in a bunch of different countries. And so I've had to learn different ways that electricity is charged and priced and paid for. You know, sometimes with a building in Thailand, for example, like you're paying a share of the electricity to the entire building, as opposed to where it's much more metered here. I've recently moved into a building, for example, where we share the hot water, which I'm not very happy about. Things that I didn't think of before I moved into an older building. But, you know, looking at those different ways that pricing is done has meant that I'm a bit of a rabid deal hunter
right.
for my electricity. And I'm really interested in alternatives, you know, where there's the middleman cut out, for example. I guess, you know, working in startups as well, I'm like, oh, what Amber Electric is doing is really interesting, and, you know, how different companies are charging it and rolling my Netflix into that. So I shop around more than most people, I think.
David, can we turn to what happens when we do shop around? Does the way we're treated depend on who the seller thinks we are? I ask this because you built a call center staffed by actors to find out. What did you do?
Yeah, so we had a casting call. This is in around 2017 with actors in Melbourne, and we had scripts, and we interviewed and hired, I think it was 10 actors, and then we brought them into the fourth floor of the Department of Economics at the University of Melbourne, and we effectively had an actor-based call center. And so our actors started calling up the electricity retailers across Melbourne, and they were calling up as different types of consumers. And so the companies don't know they're in a field experiment or a trial to try to understand when somebody calls up, what types of deals can they get, and how does the deals they get depend on how they present themselves on the call.
What did you find out?
So let's think about what Megan was saying about being a mover or a switcher. So let's pretend you just moved to Melbourne as a person. So we would have somebody like that. I just moved to Melbourne and I need a deal. And so I'm going to ask, what's the best price you can give me to a retailer? And you will get a price. The same actor or another actor will call up. They're identical. They're otherwise a typical energy consumer. And they say, I live in Melbourne and I'm currently with some company and I'm thinking about switching. What's the best deal you can give? So we compare a situation where someone's moving. I just need to turn the lights on to somebody that's like, oh, I'm looking around. What are you willing to do? And so you can see straight away that in our calls, the person who's just moving in trying to get the lights switch on is getting a 1% to 2% higher rate than the person that's switching. And they're otherwise identical.
Can you get even better, right?
Yeah. And then so that was how the call starts. Then we start to have a conversation. So then these act, again, all in our kind of our scripts, you might reveal one of two things as we chatted with the call center. One type of person will call up and say, well, I looked around, I got this other price, and it's kind of like an okay price, like middle of the range price. How can you do compared to that? And another type of caller might get to the second part of the chat and say, I called around and I got the best price in the market. What are you going to do about it?
Oh.
Right. So we were varying what we call a reference price, right? Like, it's not that different from haggling in a market. Like, oh, come on, you can do better than that.
And you don't expect that the electricity company is going to haggle back.
And they do.
This is what's so wild about this.
Yeah, so they will match better deals.
Right? And how much in it? That is, how much more can you get merely by appearing to know how the market works?
Right. So if you have some information, especially if you know the better deals, you're getting another 1.5% to 2% cut on your annual bills. This is, you know, $40-$50 every time we can get a better deal just from calling up with a bit of information. And then even if two people have the exact same, they're both super switched on, we got a great deal, but one's that new customer and the other's that person who lives in Melbourne and the other person's new to Melbourne, the switcher's still getting 2% even on top of that, right? Because think of if you're a retailer, Megan's just living in Melbourne getting deals and I'm thinking, well, to get her to switch, I need to like pay for her inconvenience to come. Whereas if it's Dave and it's the new guy in Melbourne, well, I mean, he needs lights on, whatever. He doesn't have any loyalty or anything I have to overcome. Yeah, so you're basically, you call up, you get 2% off, you call up and you know something, you get another 2%, you call up, you know something, and you're trying to switch, you get another 1.5% to 2%.
We have a loyalty tax. We have an ignorance tax.
If you don't do this, that's the tax.
Is this script anywhere online that I can use?
No, yeah. Well, I mean, it's basically what I just said. You have to, you know, and you have to have credible information, right? So we would go into the market and say, what were the best deals? And there's important issues, you know, as a researcher, when you do market trials like this, right? And so we had to work through a pretty intensive, you know, human ethics process to say, these are going to be short calls. We're going to cut them off. We're going to destroy the data. We're not going to record anything. It'll be all anonymized. And we're also, you know, ultimately going to have people switching as a result. So these actors were all switching to better retailers. They're telling their mates, these sorts of things. So
you actually asked your actors to tell their mates as sort of a reward.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, we actively encouraged them to teach everybody they can about how to switch and search, because they were also, like Megan, surprised, like, we're getting better deals. I'm like, yeah.
My jaw is on the desk. Yeah, this is shocking. I thought maybe you'd say a couple of percent, but that's like 5-6% you could be saving.
And, you know, part of it is, as a researcher, creating an evidence base to get at this sort of stuff, because these loyalty taxes are hidden and they sit in the market and they're really hard to pull apart from a whole bunch of other things, right? Peter might say there's loyalty tax and I say, that's just cost, right? So what we really are trying to do is isolate these things in marketplaces to even just to show, you know, hard evidence, they are there.
You're listening to The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, and my guests with something of a masterclass in the way we're taken advantage of, Megan Flamer from the Monash Business School and RMIT University, and a former Young Economist of the Year, David Byrne. David, the Australian energy regulator, Claire Savage, advised us to shop around when she announced this year's annual increases, but she conceded that most of us would not.
There are probably nearly 80% of customers who are currently paying more than they need to. So customers that if they were out shopping around could be getting a better deal. So really important that customers shop around.
It's really important, but many of us, so many of us don't do it. How reluctant have you found us to be to do even the tiniest bit of work shopping around to get the best deals on electricity, on gas, on petrol, on superannuation, on mortgages, everything?
This is right on the frontier of what a lot of economists are currently studying is there's just mass inaction and inattention in many of the markets we live in. And that's oftentimes it's like saying people don't know what they're doing, da, 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 da. We're just busy.
We're not so much lazy as busy.
We're busy. And these are often seen as small stakes for any one of us individually at any point in time. So if you miss time filling up your petrol tank, it'll cost you $10. But if you do that 52 times, right, it adds up. And from the company's point of view, if we make that mistake 52 times and there's 6 million people not doing it, it's big money. So we have all these little frictions that we live with in our life. We're busy. Sometimes doing the math and doing the comparisons difficult. You see those, have you ever looked at an electricity contract? It's like 55 pages of text and you're like, I couldn't be bothered. My kids are yelling at me. I got to get out of here and do something.
And you can't
this.
Do the calculations to compare because there are, well, you could if you were brilliant and I'm not.
You have calculators online that try to do this for you with, you know, provided by governments. So they're trying to do something about that. The problem is, even if I give you the most amazing platform, you're still too busy even give it a go. Right. And so one thing we did find kind of optimistically, and if anybody's listening to this, I would encourage you just to do the following just once. If you're going to buy petrol this week, if you haven't done it, can you just try an app before you go? So if you're in New South Wales, try Fuel Check or Queensland Fuel Check, Tasmania Fuel Check, or Petrol Spy. Just give it a go and then go make a purchase. Because we studied this in Perth in 2015-16. There's another study we ran. And what we found was that sort of Thursday story we talked about, they got in a fight for a month one time and Thursday wasn't working and they were pricing all over the places. Prices went everywhere. And in Perth, they have this platform that allows them to search for better deals. Before the fight, about 10% of the folks at Perth were searching with the platform. After the fight, 18 to 19% were using. So it was like a doubling of the, you know, active looking online to search and get a better deal. Now, the fight eventually went away. Everything went back to easy peasy and they were back to coordinating on the prices every week. But everybody kept searching. So the thing is if you give it a go once, it tends to be really sticky. And I think part of the reason that is because you get to see, I'm actually really losing out here. And it's hard to unsee being taken advantage of when you make a consumption decision, having seen the gains you can get from looking.
What kind of people are the least likely to shop around to see those gains? And I'm asking here in terms, I guess, of socioeconomic status of earnings.
Often when we deregulate markets and say, let the market rip and allow for, you know, prices to be all over the place and think, you know, there'll be these platforms and people will use it. The kind of the intuition that folks often have going into that is, well, you know, low-income people will be particularly benefited from the ability to search and get a better deal because they value the dollar. And richer people, if they don't look and they get ripped off, well, we can kind of live with that. When you look in the data, however...
And you've done this. You've actually worked with Energy Consumers Australia surveying 2,000 people at a time.
Exactly. Energy Australia Consumers provides this great thousands and thousands of consumers getting surveyed. And they ask questions like, have you ever looked for a different retail electricity contract? Like ever. 50% of people have looked ever. There's half of us that have just actually never done it ever, right? And then they kind of get people to report different income buckets that they're in. And so again, when we say deregulated electricity, you would think that maybe the low income buckets are the ones searching and actively doing it. It's the exact opposite. So what you see is really rich people, they don't look. But the lower income folks making less than $40,000 per year look by far the least.
They barely look at all.
They barely look at all. And so you're getting only 30% of them have ever looked.
Does this make sense to you, Megan? Because these are the people for whom savings would matter the most.
You're talking about people below 40 grand a year. Yeah. There's a survival mechanism in place there where they would be despondent about whether or not anyone would help them. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's taking you X amount of time to get to work because you have to live in an outer suburb, for example, we know that that really affects low-income earners. They have to live further out. They've got to travel further. It's harder for them to make healthy choices. It's more difficult for them to have the time then because they'd be working longer hours. They're usually working, you know, trading hours for wages. So they're working longer hours and then they don't have time to be sitting on their phone looking through all of these. So you might not even realise that there are ways for you to shop around.
So to sum up, what we've learned so far, it's that the people who would most benefit from shopping around are the least likely to do it. Now, we're full of information on websites and so on if we choose to search for it. David, are you at all optimistic that this can come good for the people who actually need it to come good?
The question is, we have all this data that people could use to find better deals. How are we processing the data to help them do that and make it easy for them?
Comparison website isn't enough.
It's not enough. Like if you build the field of dreams, they're not going to go because it's still too much of an effort in my day-to-day life. It needs to be sort of easy. And so, you know, one type of intervention we're starting to see is where we process data and start coaching people basically through apps. So an AI algorithm that's going to watch the market for you. So it's like your little robot market coach. And it'll ping you every now and again.
You mean it'll know my shopping list and it'll say, go to Coles this week.
Go to Coles this week. Petrol prices, just go fill up. Or petrol prices, if you can hold off, that'd be great. And so the idea here is to use data and AI to be this hyper-intelligent market watchman and just process that information and give you easy and well-timed actions, actionable items to coach you into it. What comes after the AI coach? This is getting a bit over the horizon, but let me just paint a picture for you. What if we started thinking about redesigning markets and using data and algorithms to make this even easier for you? So let's just use retail electricity as an example. And there are examples like this pushing on this frontier. I say to Megan, look, hit a button on your phone and you can just opt out of the retail electricity market. In opting out of it, there will be basically an AI agent for you, and it'll be constantly comparing prices across the companies, and it'll just keep you always on the lowest rate, and you just pay a bill.
It'll switch.
You don't have to pay attention. You're out. You hit the button, and this is automating the switching and real-time monitoring. You could even push further and say something like, you know, this would take government intervention. We're going to run an auction every day or maybe every few months, and Megan, I'll just give you, you'll always be at the lowest bidder.
I love the idea of this, and I do not have enough trust in the market or in the government to do the right thing. Because anytime that we're using this kind of data and these kinds of commodities, someone is getting a payday. And I think unless it's transparent and unless I, as a consumer, are really informed about it, which most people don't want to be, as we've discussed, it makes it really tricky.
Sure.
I'm very excited about a lot of the changes, and I know that in tech, the changes come quickly. And I know that when we're looking at how to regulate those markets, it can be very tricky.
Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of faith that the government and government systems and regulations will ever move as quickly as tech innovation is happening.
I want to have that faith. And I also need to thank you both, Megan Flamer, associate at the Monash Business School, and retail super sleuth and former Young Economist of the Year, Professor David Byrne from RMIT University. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
And that promised update, David and four colleagues have just extended their examination of the Perth petrol market to Melbourne. They find that while the Melbourne service stations appeared to attempt to coordinate their prices in the same way as it appeared happened in Perth, they had less success because in Melbourne there are no laws limiting how often stations can charge prices and undercut each other. In Perth, it's once per day. In Melbourne, discipline kept breaking down. If you have any thoughts or questions or comments, particularly when it comes to strategies for shopping around and the strategies firms use to make it hard, you can email us, theeconomy.stupid@abc.net.au. Remember, no economic question is stupid. Thanks to producers Sam Carmody and Rachel Bongiorno. I'm Peter Martin. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.